no marriage is perfect. Some, I suppose, are made in heaven, but they all have to be endured down here, among the dirty dishes of everyday life. My marriage wasn't perfect. To be blunt, my marriage started badly and ended worse. If, I mean, it ever ended at all.
Bodies and Souls by Martin Wade, with David Horovitch as Harry, Marcia Warren as Joyce, and Gerard McDermott as Uncle John.
The beginning of the end, if there was a beginning, and if there was an end, was one Sunday evening. Joyce, she's my wife, she was slumped in her favourite armchair, her eyes fixed on the flickering screen.
Hildegard of Bingen, born in 1098, was a German abbess, whose piety, poetry, and miracles were the wonder of the age. She experienced divine revelations and apocalyptic visions. With good reason was she dubbed the Sibyl of the Rhine.
Harry! Harry!
Coming, my dear.
But it is for her music particularly that she is best remembered today.
Yes, my dear.
I think it must be time for a cup of tea.
Well, if you think it is, my dear, I'm sure it must be. Good programme.
Fascinating. Tea.
That's how it began. If there was a beginning. A television programme about Hildegard of Bingen. The effects were first noticed the following day. I had made lunch and we had eaten it. I was sat picking at my teeth and turning my thoughts in the direction of the washing up. Joyce was staring ahead, out over the debris of the table.
I can hear words. I can hear music.
Words? Music? Don't think so, my dear. It was my custom to call her my dear, despite everything.
Bring me some paper, Harry.
What?
Give me a pen, quick.
Paper. Pen.
Oh, make a joyful noise unto God, all ye fishes and amphibians. Let all the vertebrates magnify his name.
Now, this sudden outburst, I ought to tell you, caught me somewhat on the hop, for Joyce had never been one for expressions of religious fervour.
The song of praise leaps forth unbidden, gloria in excelsis Deo.
Good Lord.
Amen.
Pen, paper. She fell to her work with gusto.
Oh, bliss. Oh, blessedness.
Covering the sheets of A4 with great black blobs of inspiration.
Transport of otherworldly delights. Warm feeling of spiritual ardour.
Good Lord.
Hush.
I hushed. I stood and stared. The first onrush of surprise gave way to a feeling of foreboding. I went into the hall and wound up the grandfather clock. I found my Stanley knife, took it up into the bathroom and did some remedial work on my verruca. By the time I had returned to the kitchen, Joyce was her old self again. She was doing nothing.
Harry?
Yes, my dear?
What's all this?
She pointed to the pieces of paper on the kitchen table.
What is it?
Well, at a glance, I'd say it was words and music, my dear.
Words? Music? Well, who put it there?
You did, my dear.
Me? But surely I have no gift for the devotional arts. Look, look. There's a scribble at the bottom.
Yes.
A signature, perhaps?
Yes.
It isn't my signature.
Is it not?
What does it say? Read it for me, Harry.
Hildegard of Bingen.
Bingen, Bingen. Hildegard of Bingen? Oh, Harry. You realise what's happened, don't you?
Over the long, very long years of our marriage, I have been the victim of a number of the wife's foolish fancies. There was, for example, a brief flurry of interest in antiques. Into the loft I had to crawl. Out I came again, clutching previously neglected bric-a-brac, which Joyce hoped would astonish both the experts and herself. A while later, it was photography. Joyce and her prints of darkness.
Oh, rapture indescribable.
They were fads, that's all they were. Joyce's chief hobby is resting her legs.
Oh, reassurance ineffable.
So, you see, there was no reason to believe at the time that reincarnation would have much of a shelf life.
Oh, ecstatic scrutiny. Of the Almighty's mystery.
A new bee had flown into Joyce's bonnet. By some curious corkscrew of fate, mystical, musical Hildegard had found a new incarnation. A saintly soul had transmigrated into the less than perfect body of a thoroughly indolent woman. And I had to be part of the charade.
Sights, oh, heavenly heights.
I emptied the spare room of all frivolous furniture, brought in a simple chair and table and a low pallet and some straw from the local city farm, transformed the room into a cell fit for Hilda. From here, in due course, could be heard the low murmurings of earnest prayers, the impetuous scratching of a quill pen, and the singing nun's unique vocal effects.
New lens, new seas, and also new antipodes.
But I was confident it wouldn't last.
Joyce? Hildegard?
Unsure, I waited for positive identification. She turned slowly.
I think it must be time for a cup of tea.
Ah, Joyce, my dear, listen, I've been having a little ponder. You may recall that a little while back, before you or I had ever heard of Hildegard of Bingen, we invited Bill and Mary to come over on Friday evening.
Oh, did we?
Yes, my dear, for a meal and mahjong. Myself, I don't care too much about mahjong. Myself, I don't understand mahjong. But since my retirement, the hours, I find, hang a bit heavy. So I like to have Bill and Mary round from time to time. Now, the problem is, my dear, that I don't feel things are quite settled at the moment.
Oh?
There is a niggling worry at the back of my mind that Hildegard, sweet, devout lady as she is, might unwittingly spoil Friday's entertainment if she were to become involved. What's your view, my dear?
My view, Harold, is that you're a very simple, hopelessly conventional person with very narrow perspectives and ambitions.
Oh.
My view is, it's no wonder that you've never managed a transmigratory experience yourself. What soul would want to share a portion of eternity with you?
Chicken Kiev. Yes, still there. Greens. Still green.
Harry?
Yes, my dear?
I think it must be time for a cup of tea.
Yes, my dear. By the way, Bill rang. They're going to be early. Tell me, how are you feeling?
Thirsty.
Yes, but any signs of Hildegard? I was assured there were none. No spiritual stirrings, no visions, no inclination to sing unto the Lord a new song. To be fair to the blessed Hilda, she was kind enough to keep quiet the whole evening.
Good meal.
Good wine.
Good coffee.
Good wafer thin chocolate mints.
And now, by popular demand,
Mahjong!
Good!
Joyce, my dear, are you ready to play?
Oh, heat. Burning sands. Steaming river. Mm. Palm trees. Oasis.
Not quite ready.
Joyce.
Pyramids. The Sphinx.
I know. It's a kind of free association game.
Bars of donkey milk. Mummified scarab.
My turn. Strange dogs with pointy ears.
People you only see side on.
Beasts with a hump.
Oh, where am I? Where am I?
A wild guess, Joyce. Egypt?
Yes. In fact, we've been thinking about taking a holiday there next year.
Yeah, really?
Lovely.
Yes.
So then...
Without any more ado...
Ma...
Young!
Joyce, my dear?
Wield your large, lofty fan, oh, large, lofty Nubian slave, and I shall sink back upon my perfumed couch.
What's she been drinking, Harry?
Yes. And why weren't we offered some? You realise what's happened, don't you?
Oh, yes. Evening ruined. Joyce carried off to her perfumed couch, consequent failure to reappear at the mahjong table, colossal embarrassment, reputation secured as alcoholics and or nutters. Fiasco.
Oh, Anthony. Anthony.
Amazing, isn't it? Who would have guessed that a single worn and ancient body could house within a single week not only its own proper soul, such as it is, but also those of Hildegard of Bingen and Cleopatra of the Nile?
Anthony, remove your horsehair helmet and unstrap your shiny, shiny greaves. Come, come to my perfumed couch.
A perfumed couch, it seemed, was much to be preferred to a pallet and straw. As the days passed, it was clear that Joyce was infinitely happier schlepping around in her shocking blue party dress and stuffing herself with figs than on her knees in Hildegard's disreputable hooded bathrobe. But I was confident, nonetheless, that it wouldn't last.
Harry! Harry!
It was Wednesday. I'd put the rubbish out, I'd swept the patio, I'd tidied the garden shed.
Harry, come here!
I entered through the French window. Joyce was stood in front of the goldfish bowl, peering into the murky depths. Yes, my dear, mea culpa, I should have changed their water days ago.
You should, but from now on, the fish are my responsibility.
Oh, right, excellent.
Just now, Harry, I was sitting in the armchair here.
As she does.
And I heard voices.
Voices?
Mummy's voice.
Mummy, I should inform you, passed over a while ago.
And Daddy's voice.
Daddy likewise.
And I turned to where the voices were coming from.
And guess what?
It was the goldfish bowl.
Well.
The truth.
As revealed in a ludicrous book from the library.
Is this? The eternal cycle rolls on and on. In death there is life, for the soul is immortal, indestructible. And when it leaves one body, it finds another and another and another. Hmm. And according to ancient religious writings, Mummy and Daddy will no doubt be able to confirm much of this from their personal experience.
No doubt.
Hello, Mummy. Hello, Daddy. According to ancient religious writings, there's a sort of natural order of transmigration. When the soul leaves a human body, it enters the body of a quadruped. And when the quadruped dies, the soul inhabits the body of a bird.
And after that?
A fish.
A fish.
And so on and so on.
You see, it's all perfectly reasonable. Over the long, very long years of our marriage, some facets of Joyce had become indisputable. Was she, for instance, incredibly lazy? Yes, she was. Utterly humourless? Yes. Unloving? Yes. Dictatorial? Absolutely. But I'd never thought she was mad. I knew I was. I had to be mad to have endured a life of misery and servitude. But now it seemed that she, too, had slipped off her trolley.
Come on, Mummy. Come on, Daddy. Time for elevenses.
Elevenses, indeed. Do you know which fish is which?
Of course I do. This one here that's lying on its back, this is Mummy.
Oh, yes. So the other one that's lying on its back must be Daddy. Fair enough.
Oh, Mummy. Oh, Daddy. I've missed you so much since you left your human bodies. It's so hard being on my own when things go wrong.
By that, she means those few occasions when I made a feeble, futile attempt to resist the fascist regime.
Having no one sympathetic to talk to.
You know, you shouldn't overfeed them.
No one to comfort me, to be on my side.
It says on the box, twice a day.
Twice a day?
Your son-in-law's been trying to starve you.
Yes, he has, a horrid man. Come on, Mummy. Come on, Daddy. Heavensies. Harry?
Yes, my dear?
Do fish normally lie on their backs?
Well, my dear, they normally do when they're dead. They were buried in the garden, side by side. It was a moving ceremony. I'd prepared a little wooden memorial for them on which the words "died of a surfeit" had been inscribed, but I lacked the nerve to erect it. Black was worn for several weeks. We talked in whispers, if we talked at all. The grieving process, I think, might have gone on for months, had not Joyce been distracted by a succession of new arrivals from the ether. Nell Gwynne moved in.
I'm short of stature and illiterate, but I've already witnessed our spirits.
Boadicea.
I'm queen of the rebellious Iceni who live in modern Norfolk and Suffolk.
Florence Nightingale.
The lady with the lamp.
Who disturbed my nights by repeatedly shining a torch in my face. But I was sure it wouldn't last.
Harry! Harry!
Yes, my dear. Coming, my dear. She was in the garden, and she was pottering around in a shirt and a pair of trousers of mine, a floppy hat and Wellington boots. In the ordinary course of events, Joyce would never venture into the great outdoors except to lie on a folding bed and sunbathe. What was happening? Had she been visited by the soul of Vita Sackville West?
Harry?
Yes, my dear?
What are these?
These, my dear, these are your heleniums yellow.
Heleniums yellow?
And these are your chrysanthemums white.
Chrysanthemums?
And these are your delphiniums blue.
Delphiniums.
I identified each type of flower as best I could, and Joyce, in turn, examined it closely, getting down on all fours, muttering, peering.
You see, Harry, the fishy bodies died, but their souls lived on.
Of course they did.
According to the ancient religious writings, when the soul has left the body of a fish, it migrates to the world of vegetation. I mean, it might, for instance, enter into a young plant or sapling.
I think I'll catch your drift.
Here we are! I found them! Oh, isn't that extraordinary?
And she pointed out to me a couple of...
What did you say they were?
Hollyhocks, which were not far removed from the fish's burial site, and she got up close to them and addressed them lovingly.
Hello, Mummy. Hello, Daddy.
Harold!
Yes, my dear?
What are you doing?
I'm just putting these potatoes into the oven.
Stop!
I thought we might have potatoes in their jackets.
No, Harold, no. We are having potatoes neither with nor without their jackets. How could you think of eating potatoes? They could each of them be someone I know.
But by the same logic, my dear, we have already denied ourselves all meats and the poached haddock that I like to do on a Friday and various forms of crustacean. Are we now to be deprived of vegetables and fruit? If we don't starve, my dear, we shall at least develop scurvy.
Oh.
A compromise was at length worked out, whereby Joyce would subject each potential item of food to a rigorous interview in order to discover all that might be known about the particular comestible and thereby avoid any tragic accidents. But an interesting question suddenly occurred to me. Is there life after vegetation? When the hollyhocks, for instance, are taken to the compost, as in the fullness of time all hollyhocks must, will it not be the end of the line for Mummy and Daddy?
No, 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 no.
Oh.
When they cease to be hollyhocks, you see, they'll enter a human body once more. The eternal cycle rolls on and on. It had no beginning, but you'll have no end.
Hildegard, you see, was in a vegetative state before she found a suitable home in Joyce. Likewise, Cleopatra and the rest. And as well as Mummy and Daddy, Joyce's Auntie Gwen was in the garden too.
She's a tulip. And so is Grandad Ratchet.
And the Collingwood twins who fell off the top of the cathedral in Barcelona.
They're in the holly bush.
And as for me, I was in a state of deep dejection, incarcerated in a madhouse, shackled for what remained of my life. Oh, how I wished we had been blessed with children. The chances were somewhat remote, of course. The little mites would need to have arrived by immaculate conception. But what a comfort they would have been to me in my gloom and decrepitude. I wondered about getting a pen pal, or dialing one of those chat lines. Only 25p a minute. What I needed, desperately, was a good companion, a present help in trouble.
The gerbil accessories are over here, madam, and numerous items which might enliven the small creature's day.
Thank you. He had a little wheel once, but it made him dizzy.
Oh. Morning, sir.
Morning.
Morning.
And, of course, he's got no head for heights, so he mustn't have a ladder.
Can I help you, sir?
I hope so.
I've had a bath, have you?
I'm looking for a pet.
Sir, this being a pet shop, you have every prospect of success. Any particular pet? Sir?
Not really. Something that hangs around the house, you know, and you can have a chat with.
How intriguing. No, go on.
Let me see. What about the bird? The truth is, Minor Bird...
I've had a bath, have you?
The truth is...
How intriguing. Do go on.
Thank you. The truth is, we don't converse much, Joyce and me. Even in the old days, tete-a-tetes would only occur when Joyce's tate was giving instructions to mine. All our possible subjects for discourse, e.g. the most memorable character I have ever met, my favourite colour, these seem to have been exhausted by the end of the honeymoon. Never my idea. Marriage. Me, I wanted to live in sin with Sophie Shorthouse. But I met Joyce on the top deck of a number 53, and she followed me home. And later, I recall, she bought me a tie and a box of mints. And later still, she threatened me with her father. It was a whirlwind romance. I mean, looked at dispassionately, and heaven knows there's been a lot of dispassion over the long, very long years, married life has been a succession of extremely regrettable incidents. A 30-year rocky patch followed by a recent sudden descent into Tartarus. But you know, now that I've begun to unburden myself, I'm feeling quite a bit better already.
Oh. I've been in a trance again.
I've been in a pet shop.
What in God's name is that?
It's a minor bird, my dear. I saw him sitting there and he sort of spoke to me.
Does he speak?
Oh, yes, he says...
I've had a bath, have you?
And also...
How intriguing. Do go on.
I'm not sure I like him.
Nonsense, my dear.
He has an evil look in his eye.
No, no, just a playful glint.
I wish you had consulted with me first.
My dear, I bought a bird, not a car.
Well, I don't like him. And I'll tell you this. He is never, never, never to be let out of his cage.
Love and marriage. Now you, come on.
Love and marriage.
Good. Go together like a horse and carriage.
Harry.
You know, Minor Bird, you ought to have a name.
Harold.
Harold.
Well, I'm flattered, of course, but it might lead to confusion.
In the kitchen, my dear.
What has happened to my tea?
Oh, wizard witch, a rat bag.
It's on its way, my dear.
Crud, slob, slug, bilge face.
The bird's got new words.
Yes, and they're not very pleasant ones either. I hope he isn't talking to me.
Over the weeks, I worked very hard with the bird.
Who's a clever boy, then?
And succeeded in greatly enlarging his vocabulary.
Up yours, matey.
I had begun to appreciate the bird's potential. He was not merely a chum, a feathery shoulder to cry on. He could talk back. He could say offensive things to Joyce. He was a means of taking the fight to the enemy. Where I quailed and quivered, he unblushingly told the truth.
Gorgon, gorilla breath.
Where I lacked courage, he lacked none. Bog brush. Bottom wipe.
Bog brush. Bottom wipe.
Who's a clever boy? I had decided what his name was, too. Uncle John.
Uncle John? Why are you calling him Uncle John?
Because he is Uncle John.
What do you mean?
I mean, my dear, that the soul of my late uncle is now resident inside the minor bird.
What?
It beggars belief, does it not? And yet I'm utterly convinced of it. May I take your plate, my dear?
Oh.
Thank you.
Does it have to make that noise?
He's asleep. He always sleeps after lunch, just like Uncle John did.
Harold, I'm not fooled. You don't really think it's your Uncle John. This is your idea of a joke at my expense.
No, no. No, no, no.
How very shallow and tiny-minded of you.
Well, I'm sorry, but Uncle John's soul must be somewhere. I mean, why should so many of your clan be in the vicinity and none of mine?
Your uncle, you know, was a hideous, obnoxious man.
Many found him so. My view of him was that he was somewhat bloody-minded and feisty, but a good fellow to have on your team.
He took a violent dislike to me from the day we met. He urged you in the strongest possible terms not to have anything to do with me, and he waged a hate campaign against me.
Oh, surely not.
When did he die? 10 years ago, was it?
Just about.
Hmm.
He spent the intervening period as a dog, I think, fouling the pavements.
If you want my view on the matter...
Oh? Yes, Uncle?
If you want my view, something must be done about you and that woman.
Yes. Yes, it must.
Something bloody drastic.
Yes.
After all that's gone before, after all the long, bloody long years of misery you've endured, and the recent weeks of insanity, it's time to say, thus bloody far...
And no bloody further. Yes.
For God's sake, you could have cited drudgery, cruelty, mental abuse, general incompatibility, and virtual breakdown of relations after a mere 2 months of marriage. Never mind. Three bloody decades. If you ask me, enough
is bloody well enough.
Yeah.
You're not wrong, Uncle. I resolved that I would ask Joyce for a divorce, or, failing that, a trial separation, minimum period 10 years. I prepared a speech to the effect that she and I had done our best, nobody's fault, 30 years, a decent enough spell at the crease, time to draw stumps, close of play, and such like. Joyce? She was in the garden. Joyce? She didn't respond. She stared past me.
Listen.
Yes?
We'll come to a dividing of the ways.
A dividing of the ways? Yes, yes. Do you know, my dear, that's exactly my feeling about it.
Either we abandon our efforts or we go on and on.
No, no, we don't want to go on and on.
On and on until the government yields to pressure.
The government, my dear?
On and on until women's suffrage is at last achieved.
Oh.
I say we go on and on.
I say we fight for our rights.
Joyce.
I say we use all means at our disposal. Let us chain ourselves to the railings outside the Houses of Parliament. And when we've been set free, let's rush off and smash the windows of West End clubs. Let us go on hunger strike. Those of us who want to, that is. Let us drop corrosives into pillar boxes and chars into the serpentine. Let us take an X to a very valuable painting. By the Spaniard Velasquez. Which is hanging in the National Gallery.
Joyce. Later in the day, when Joyce asked me if I realised what had happened to her, I was able to reply with some confidence, "Yes, my dear, you've been playing host to the soul of the esteemed suffragette, Mrs. Christabel Pankhurst." "Wrong," she replied. "It's Emmeline, not Christabel." No matter. Christabel would be along soon, and Catherine the Great, and Joan of Arc, and the Virgin Mary. The best of dead womankind would be rubbing ethereal shoulders inside the general repository that was my wife. Well, not only that, but there was Mummy and Daddy and the rest of the friends and relations who dwell within the herbaceous borders. Surely, I thought, with so many souls to look after, she would hardly notice the absence of her husband.
Joyce? Joyce?
Yes.
We've always slept in separate beds. In the early weeks of our marriage, the beds were separate but almost adjacent. But for a long, long while now, there's been clear blue carpet between us.
Joyce? My dear?
Before I say good night, I'd like to put a proposition to you.
What?
No, absolutely not.
Joyce?
No, no, no. Good night.
Joyce?
Harold, you are not on any account to come anywhere near me.
Of course not, my dear.
This is my bed, and I'm lying in it, and you are to lie in yours.
Absolutely. I had no intention of doing anything else. Believe me. No, I was actually thinking about various cricketing metaphors, none of which in the heat of the moment I can now remember, but which were intended to indicate that it was probably time, almost certainly time, for our marriage to end.
What?
By means, of course, of an extremely amicable sort of parting.
An amicable parting? What? You bloody bastard!
You see, my dear...
Shut up!
It seems to me...
Shut up! After all I've done for you, you bastard! After all you've put me through, you bastard! How could you? After all these years, you bastard! You bastard!
So, my dear... Is it yes or no? I'd been a fool to hope. I'd been a fool to ask. As far as Joyce was concerned, divorce was out of the question. Divorce was never even on her agenda. Why should she want a divorce? Our sort of marriage, dire as it was for me, suited her down to the ground.
Yes, truly, she is a cow. However...
Yes?
Not all is lost.
Is it not?
And I have a plan.
Do you now?
But I don't think I ought to tell you what it is.
Oh, right. As you wish.
It's a bloody fine plan.
I'm prepared to believe you.
And you wouldn't be involved at all. Not at all.
Oh, good.
Except, of course...
Yes?
There is just one thing I'd require of you. You'd have to let me out of the cage.
The next day, the weather was perfect. Not a cloud, etc. Joyce's friends and relations were basking in the sunshine, and Joyce herself, in suffragette mode, had taken the lock and chain that I used for my bicycle and was attaching herself to the garden fence. Me, I had jobs to do, duties to perform, but I did nothing. I sat on the sofa in the living room, and Uncle John sat in his cage, and we looked at each other.
"Let me out. That's all that's required."
I said nothing. I sighed. From the garden came the penetrating voice of Mrs. Pankhurst.
"There's women in! There's women!"
Hey-ho! Another day.
"We demand justice!"
Another portion of misery.
"Sisters, remember this. Our cause is right. Ours is a glorious and a righteous struggle. Ecstatic victory!"
"Let me out. Go on. It's a bloody fine flat. Go on."
"You promise, if I do, that you won't make a mess?"
"What kind of mess?"
"No bird turds on the carpet."
"Oh, good Lord, no, not one. And I swear it." "That's the way. You know it makes sense." "Oh, much obliged."
He was true to his word. No mess on the carpet.
"Adios!"
He winged it straight out through the open French window and into the garden.
"Sisters, we shall not give way! Hurrah! Sisters, God is a woman! Hurrah! And she's on our side! Sisters, the scent of victory is up our noses, and we..."
"The bird! How's your birds in the garden?"
I did nothing. It was my day for doing nothing. I sat on the sofa.
"Harold, come quickly. Harold! The bird!"
When I got to her...
"We shall not give way."
I discovered...
"Oh, my God!"
...that her throat was ripped to shreds.
"Oh, my God!"
...and that she was dripping great globs of blood.
"We shall not surrender. Hurrah! Help!"
Of Uncle John, there was no sign. "Joyce..."
"We shall go on and on."
"Joyce, I need to unfasten you so that I can get you horizontal, and then you might bleed less profusely. You don't happen, do you, to know the number to release the lock?"
"On and on."
"Oh, it's the year of a famous battle. Hastings, Naseby, Agincourt, Trafalgar."
"On and on."
"Waterloo, that's what it is. When the hell was Waterloo?"
She died in my arms, standing up. The police were more than a little interested in the manner of Joyce's death, and it did have its unusual aspects, I admit, but my story was so unusual that they eventually decided that I must be free of all guilt. They reasoned that if I really had killed my wife, I might have invented a more plausible story. 1815, the Battle of Waterloo. It's just come to me. I began a life of quiet contentedness. I was my own master. I invited Bill and Mary over for chicken Kiev and Scrabble.
She had a good send-off.
Lovely.
Yes. It all seemed to go without a hitch.
Have you seen the minor bird since the dreadful day?
No, no. And I wouldn't have him back. You can't have a violent killer as a pet. Perhaps, in truth, he acted out of what he thought were the best of motives. But he was strangely, strangely misguided. Blood is on his scrawny head.
She was one of a kind, was your Joyce.
No one quite
like her.
That's very true.
And now?
She's gone.
Oh,
dear.
Well, back to the game. My turn, I think. Let me see. F. R. E. Free. I'm out. Of one. Free. No one to browbeat or bully me. No one to vex me with a succession of silly foibles. There was no Hilda of Bingen or Cleo of the Nile. No family gatherings amongst the chipped bark and fertilizer. Free. Of course, there wasn't a day went by when I didn't think of Joyce. And when I did think of her, I always thanked God and Uncle John for my deliverance.
Oh, yes. Life was sweet.
But then, there always has to be a but then, I find. One autumnal morning... One autumnal morning, as I say, I encountered a pink, scabby mongrel puppy sitting on the front step. And I have to tell you, the sight of this little incubus was remarkably repugnant to me.
Hey, go on! Shoo!
It refused to shoo. It only moved when I set off for the high street. Whisking its bandy, mottled legs along, it accompanied me all the way there and all the way back.
No, you horrid mutt! You can't come in with me. Off you go. I am not your owner. I don't want you. I don't need you.
The puppy pressed up against the door. It was impossible for me to go in without the puppy going in too. The puppy and I, we went in. I told it repeatedly that I didn't want it, but my words fell on deaf, floppy ears. It stayed. It spent long hours curled up on Joyce's favourite armchair. To tell the truth, all comfortable chairs were a favourite of Joyce's. From time to time, it would drag itself into the kitchen to see whether dinner was ready, or into the garden to lie on its back in the sun, or to relieve itself, taking great care as it did so to avoid contact with the hollyhocks. I suppose I had guessed the truth from the first hour of the creature's arrival. But when, within a week or two, it acquired the art of speech, then the terrible certainty could not be avoided.
Harry! Harry!
The eternal cycle rolls on and on. It had no beginning. It shall have no end. Will you excuse me? She calls, I obey. Yes, my dear. Coming, my dear.
Bodies and Souls was written by Martin Wade. Harry was played by David Horovitch, and Joyce by Marcia Warren, with Gerard McDermott as Uncle John. Other parts were played by Tessa Worsley and Ewan Meredith. Bodies and Souls was directed by Cherry Cookson.